everyone, welcome back to our Zano Animal podcast. Today we're diving into a topic that's really close to my heart and I know affects so many of you out there: pasture management for horses that are at risk of laminitis. You know, this is one of those areas where there's just so much misinformation floating around, and quite honestly I think a lot of us have been guilty of making assumptions that turned out to be completely wrong. I mean, I certainly have. For the longest time, I thought, like many people do, that grazed down pastures in the fall are pretty safe for laminitis prone horses. Turns out that's not the case at all. So today I want to talk about some really important points that every horse owner should know about. Whether you're dealing with a horse that's already had laminitis or you're just trying to prevent it from happening in the first place, these insights are going to be super valuable. Before we jump in, though, let me just say this stuff can seem overwhelming at first. There's a lot to think about, and you might be listening to this thinking, oh no, I have been doing everything wrong. But here's the thing, we're all learning, we're all doing our best, and what matters is that we keep educating ourselves and making adjustments as we go. Our horses are our best teachers. So don't beat yourself up if some of this is new to you. That's exactly why we're here, right? Okay, let's get into it. So the first thing we need to talk about is the fact that modern pasture grasses are not what they used to be. And I don't mean that in some nostalgic, back in my day kind of way. I mean literally. The composition of grasses has changed dramatically over the years. A lot of the grass varieties that are commonly used in pastures today have been specifically bred to be high in sugar. Why? Well, because that makes them more palatable to livestock and it helps cattle and sheep gain more weight more efficiently. Makes total sense from an agricultural perspective. But the problem is that what's great for cattle isn't necessarily great for horses, especially horses that are easy keepers, that are the good doers, that are prone to laminitis. These high sugar grasses can be a real ticking time bomb for vulnerable horses. When a horse consumes too much sugar, particularly the type of sugars and fructans you find in grass, it can trigger a whole cascade of metabolic issues that can lead straight to laminitis. We're talking about serious hoof inflammation, pain, and in severe cases, permanent damage. So the first step in managing pasture for at-risk horses is actually knowing what kind of grass you're dealing with. And I know, most of us aren't grass experts, right? Me included. But it's worth having a conversation with an equine nutritionist or even getting your pasture analyzed. There are specialists out there who can tell you exactly what's growing on your pasture and what kind of grass types you don't want to have there. Some grass species are just inherently higher in sugar than others, and if you've got a pasture full of them, you need to know that and you need to take measures against that. Another thing we need to talk about is the fact that grass gets stressed too, and that's bad news for our laminitis prone horses. And that's something that really surprised me when I first learned about it. Grass experiences stress, and when it does, it actually increases its sugar content as a survival mechanism. I mean, think about it, plants are living organisms too, and of course they respond to their environment. We already knew they can feel pain when you cut them, so now we also know they can experience stress. And here's the basic principle: anything that's stressful for the grass is potentially dangerous for our horses. So the big question is, what stresses grass out? Well, quite a few things, actually. Weather can be a hugely stressful factor for grass. Drought is a big one, but it's not just a lack of rain, it's about the timing too. If you get a sudden rainfall after a long dry spell, the grass can experience a rapid growth, and that new fast-growing grass is often again very high in sugar. So the grass that grows in autumn after a long and very dry summer, definitely not good for your horse, too high in sugar. But drought itself is stressful for the grass, and it also leads to increased increased sugar and also endophyte we find in the grass. But talking about the weather, cold snaps can be problematic. When grass experiences a frost, especially if it's followed by sunny days, the sugar as well as fructan contents can spike dramatically. This is why you often hear recommendations to keep laminitis-prone horses off pasture after the first frost in autumn. But here's something a lot of people don't realize. Warm, sunny days are actually when grass produces the most sugar through photosynthesis. And cool nights mean that sugar doesn't get used up as much for growth and metabolism, so fructan levels rise. Fructan and sugar both are terrible for laminitis-prone horses. So when you see these beautiful autumn days, clear, crisp, sunny, when the grass looks wonderfully green and lush, those are actually some of the most dangerous times to turn out your horse on pasture. Spring growth is notorious for causing laminitis, and a big part of that is the rabbit sugar-rich growth that happens when conditions are ideal for grass. So what do we do with all this information? Well, you adjust your management based on the weather. As soon as the autumn frost set in, close the pastures, let them rest over winter. During a drought, maybe you want to reduce grazing time or use grazing muzzles. On those sunny days after cool nights in spring or autumn, maybe your horse wears a grazing muzzle and only gets limited turnout time on pasture. It takes some vigilance for sure, but we're talking about preventing a serious health crisis here. It's worth paying attention to the weather forecast and thinking about what that might mean for your grass and your horse. Another thing that really stresses your grass and leads to higher sugar production is when it's been overgrazed and it's desperately trying to regrow. And here's the kicker. Those stressed out, super sweet grasses are exactly the ones that look the least dangerous to us as horse owners. You know, when you see those short, sparse patches of grass that look like they've been grazed down to nothing, or those pastures that look like golf courses, those can actually be some of the most dangerous grazing areas for laminitis-prone horses. I've heard so many people say, oh, there's barely any grass out there, it should be fine, but that barely any grass might be absolutely packed with sugar because it's under so much stress. It's counterintuitive, I know, but it's something we really need to wrap our heads around. Overgrazing is one of the most common stress factors. When you've got too many horses on a pasture and they're constantly grazing it down, maybe even in winter, the grass never really gets a chance to recover properly. Grass needs some vacation time too, and that's usually at least the winter period. But if it's in this constant state of stress, trying to regrow and therefore producing more and more sugar, this is stressful. This leads to high sugar content, high fructan content, high endophyte content. And the more stress a field experiences, the more high sugar grass types like ryegrass will establish themselves on your pastures, so the sugar contents rise even more. It's a vicious cycle. Overgrazing is one of the worst things you can do to your pasture. All right, now we know that you need to give your pastures some time to rest. Close them late September, let them recover during winter. This already is a big step towards better, and this means lower sugar pastures. Also rotate the pastures and let the pasture rest again and again during the growth period so it can recover itself. But even if you rotate your pastures regularly, here's another thing that's going to make you look at grass in a whole new way. Not all parts of the grass plant have the same nutritional composition. The lower parts, the bits closest to the ground, are where the sugar and these things called endophytes tend to concentrate. Now, endophytes are fungi that live symbiotically in some grass species and help the plant to better cope with stress. Unfortunately, they are beneficial for the plant, but actually toxic to the horses and are linked to all sorts of health issues we see, including, you guessed it, laminitis. And these endophytes hang out mostly in the lower portions of the grass stems. So when you let your horse graze until you have really short grass, you know, that lawn-like appearance that some people actually aim for, they're getting all the worst parts of the plant. They're essentially getting the concentrated dose of exactly what we don't want them to have, that's endophytes and sugar. These lowest parts are the storage area, or the storage space for the plants. So you need to leave them be. And this is why you'll hear sometimes recommendations about maintaining pasture height. If the grass is a bit taller, horses can graze the upper leafier part, which tend to be lower in sugar and endophytes. But of course, you've got to find a balance with other factors. You don't want it so tall and dry that your horses won't eat it anymore. So you have to find the right sweet spot where it's not too old, too tall, and not too young and too low. And I'll be honest, it takes some trial and error to figure out what works best for your specific situation. But always keep in mind the lowest 10 centimeters belong to the plant. That's about a handspan. So go out on your pasture, and if you detect areas that are grazed lower than your hand is wide, it is time to let this field rest. Let's talk about something that's really common problem, especially at boarding facilities or in some smaller properties. That's overstocking. That goes hand in hand with overgrazing. The most common reason why pastures end up looking like golf courses is overstocking. This is when you have too many horses on too little land. And I get it. Land is expensive. Board fees are expensive. Sometimes we're just working with what we have. But we need to be realistic about the impact this has. When you overstock a pasture, you're creating stress for both the grass and the horses. The grass is constantly being grazed down, never getting a proper chance to recover. You cannot rotate them that fast when you don't have enough land that the grass has time to recover. And as we talked about earlier, stressed grass equals high sugar grass, which equals laminitis risk. But it's not just about the grass. Overstocked pastures also lead to more competition between horses, which creates social stress. And they might not be getting as much movement because there's less space. Mud and poor footing become issues. Parasite loads can go up because there's more manure concentrated in a smaller area. So overstocking brings with it a whole bunch of problems. But the question is, what's the right stocking rate? Well, it really depends on your climate, your soil quality, your grass type, how much rain you get in your area, all sorts of factors. In some areas, you might be able to support 1 horse per acre. In other areas, you might need 3 or 4 acres per horse. In Germany, the area where I live, we talk about 2 to 3 hectares per horse. That's 4 to 6 acres roundabout. You need per horse to have them on pasture sustainably. A good rule of thumb is if your pasture looks like a mowed lawn or even a dirt lot with a few scattered tufts of grass, you've probably overstocked. If there's bare ground all over the place, exposed roots, erosion, these are all definitely signs that you've got too many horses on too little land. And if you are in an overstocked situation and you can't change it, maybe you're at a boarding barn or you don't control the property, then you need to compensate with more careful management in other areas. Limit the turnout time on pasture, put your horse on dry lots or track systems and hay, and be much more vigilant about your horse's condition. That brings us to another very important point. Pasture management is actually horse healthcare, and this goes out to all the managers of boarding stables as well as backyard horse owners. Because you know what I've realized over the years? Good pasture management isn't just about having a nice looking field. It's actually a critical component of horse healthcare, especially for vulnerable animals. So what does good pasture look like? Well, it starts with regular maintenance. Mulching or topping your pastures, basically cutting them down periodically, helps control which grass species dominate. It prevents some of the really undesirable high sugar varieties from taking over completely. Then there's the concept of rest periods we already talked about. Your pastures needs breaks from grazing pressure to recover properly. This isn't just about letting the grass grow back for your horses to eat. It's about allowing it to grow back in a healthy, less stressed way and recover itself. Some people rotate their pastures, some use track systems. There are lots of different approaches. Reseeding is another tool in the toolkit. If you can carefully select and introduce grass varieties that are lower in sugar and more appropriate for horses, that's fantastic. But you've got to be strategic about it. Just throwing some seed down and hoping for the best probably isn't going to cut it. And here's something that often gets overlooked: soil health. Healthy soil grows healthier grass. Overgrazing makes for bad soil, and it's worth considering things like soil testing, appropriate fertilization, and even things like harrowing to improve the sward. I know this all sounds like a lot of work, and yeah, it can be, but think of it as a preventive medicine. Every hour you spend on pasture management is potentially saving you from dealing with a laminitis crisis down the road. And anyone who's ever dealt with laminitis knows how devastating and expensive that can be, and time consuming as well. And talking about letting pastures rest, sometimes less access is more safety for the horses. This is probably one of the hardest things for horse owners to accept, and I include myself in that. We all want our horses to have as much turnout as possible. We know they're happier when they can be out moving around, grazing, just being horses. It's natural, it's good for their mental health, their physical health in so many ways. But here's the reality: for horses that are prone to laminitis, for the easy keepers, the good doers, for horses that already show early signs of metabolic trouble, sometimes unrestricted pasture access is just too risky. And that's especially true when conditions are not ideal, when the grass is stressed, when it's been overgrazed, when the weather's been extreme. This doesn't mean your horse has to live in a stable 24/7. There are so many options for managing turnout that still allow horses to move and socialize while limiting their grass intake. Grazing muzzles are probably the most common solution. And yes, I know some horses hate them. And yes, I know they can be a pain to manage, but they really can be lifesavers if you have no other turnout option than pasture. Dry lots, sacrifice paddocks are another option. These are areas where the grass has been removed or where it's never been allowed to establish, and you can still turn out your horse for hours a day. They just aren't grazing while they're out there. You supplement with hay instead, which gives you much more control over what they're eating and how much sugar they ingest. Track systems are a great way because horses move even more. They can be outside without grazing, but they get some exercise if you do them right. When it comes to pasture access restrictions, some people use grazing, strip grazing, using electric fencing to give horses access to just a small section of pasture at a time. And this limits intake while still allowing some grazing. Others do time-restricted grazing. Maybe their horse only gets an hour or two of pasture time per day, typically at times when sugar levels in grass tend to be lower. And some combine this management with grazing muzzles to further reduce the amount of grass the horse can eat during its turnout time. So there are a lot of options out there, and you know what? None of this makes you a bad horse owner. Sometimes loving your horse means making choices that aren't necessarily what we'd prefer in an ideal world. It's about prioritizing their health and well-being over our own guilt and what we think they should have. The fact is, we do not have the perfect million acres steppy pastures, and we do not all have metabolically healthy and sound horses that can easily compensate a less than ideal feeding situation. Keeping horses, no matter whether you have them in your backyard or stabled at a boarding facility, is always about compromises, and you have to try and find the best one by looking out for what is best for your own horse. If there's one thing I want to stress, it's this: you have to watch your horse like a hawk, especially if they're at risk for laminitis. Early detection is absolutely everything with this condition. The earlier you catch it, the better the outcome tends to be. So what are we looking for? Well, obviously, if your horse is suddenly walking footy or seems reluctant to move, that's a red flag. The classic rocked back on the heel stance is a telltale sign, but honestly, by the time you're seeing those obvious symptoms, laminitis is already well underway. What we really want to catch are the more subtle signs. Maybe your horse seems a little bit off after coming in from pasture. Maybe their hooves feel warmer than usual when you pick them up. Maybe their digital pulse, that's the pulse you can feel in the arteries running down their leg. Maybe this digital pulse is stronger than normal. Some horses will lie down more than usual when they feel uncomfortable. Others might just seem a bit grumpy or less enthusiastic about things that they normally enjoy. You know your horse better than anyone, so trust your gut if something seems off. And here's an important point. Don't just watch them while they're in the pasture. Pay attention to how they're after they come back. And laminitis doesn't always show up immediately. Sometimes it's hours or even days later when the inflammatory cascade really gets going. Keep a journal if it helps. Note things like how much time they spent on pasture, what the weather was like, how they seemed afterward. Over time, you might start to see patterns that can help you make better decisions on when to turn your horse out on pasture or when to better leave it on a dry lot. So if we are limiting pasture access, we've got to make sure our horses are still getting enough forage, right? Because horses are designed to be eating pretty much constantly throughout day and night. Their digestive system needs that constant trickle of plant fiber. This is where hay comes in, and not just any hay. Ideally, you want to be feeding low sugar tested hay. Yes, getting your hay tested costs a bit of money, but again, we're talking about preventing a potentially catastrophic health crisis here. Late cut grass hay is often lower in sugar than early cut hay. Some people have good results with mature timothy or other grass hay. Others feed soaked hay to reduce the sugar content even further. You just soak it in warm water for 30 to 60 minutes before feeding, and this leaches out a good portion of the water-soluble carbohydrates, mainly sugar. You can also mix your hay with straw to further reduce the nutrient content of the ration. Most horses will not eat all the straw, but sorting it out takes time, and this reduces the overall intake of nutrients as well. But make sure not to feed straw instead of hay, since straw fibers are basically undigestible for horses. So it is like starving your horse on a full stomach. This will produce all kinds of new health issues. So mix hay with straw, but don't feed straw instead of hay. The key is making sure your horse always has access to appropriate forage. Slow feeders or hay nets can also help stretch out how long it takes them to eat, which is great for keeping their digestive system happy and giving them something to do. And having a track system and hay nets throughout the track leads to a bit more exercise of the horses as well. And when you see all these options, you have to know that there is no one size fits all solution. What works for one horse might not work for another. It's about finding the right combination for your specific situation. Okay, last point, and it's an important one. You don't have to figure out all this on your own. In fact, you shouldn't try to. Regular checkups with a well-trained nutritionist are crucial for at-risk horses. They can help you monitor things like your horse's metabolic status, catch early warning signs of problems, and adjust your management plan as needed. Equine nutritionists really can be incredibly helpful in designing feeding programs that minimize risk while still meeting your horse's nutritional needs. This is especially important if your horse has already had laminitis or has other metabolic conditions like equine metabolic syndrome, Cushing's disease, and so on. Farriers or podiatrists are another key part of the team. If a horse does develop laminitis, skilled hoof trimming can make a huge difference in their recovery and long-term soundness. But even for horses who haven't had an episode, a good podiatrist or farrier can provide feedback on hoof health and whether they're seeing any early indicators of metabolic issues. Some people also work with specialized equine therapists or natural hoof care practitioners who have their focus especially on horses with laminitis. The point is there are professionals out there who understand this stuff way better than most of us ever will, and their input can be invaluable. And you know, don't be afraid to ask questions. Don't be afraid to say, I don't understand, or can you explain that in a different way? A good professional will want to help you understand what's going on with your horse and why they're making certain recommendations. Building a good team around your horse, that's one of the smartest things you can do, because managing laminitis risk isn't a one-time thing or a simple checklist. It's an ongoing process that requires knowledge, vigilance, and sometimes expert guidance. So there you have it. The most critical points are about pasture management for laminitis-prone horses. I know it's a lot to take in, and honestly, if you're feeling a bit overwhelmed right now, that's completely normal. The key takeaway is I want you to remember the old assumptions about pasture safety, that short grass is safe, that fall pastures are fine, that as long as there's not much grass, it can't cause problems. Those assumptions are outdated and potentially dangerous. We know better now. We know that grass composition has changed. We know that stress grass is high sugar grass. We know that weather and management practices have a huge impact on your horse's health. And armed with that knowledge, we can make better decisions for our horses. Does this mean pasture is off limits for laminitis-prone horses? No, not necessarily. But it does mean we need to be smart about it. We need to be strategic, we need to be vigilant, and we need to be willing to adjust our management based on conditions. Every horse is different, every property is different, and what works for your neighbor might not work for you. It's about finding the right balance for your specific situation, keeping your horse as happy and healthy as possible while minimizing the risks. And remember, you're not alone in this. There's a whole community of horse owners dealing with similar challenges, and there are professionals who can help guide you. Don't hesitate to reach out, ask questions, and keep learning. Your horse is lucky to have someone who cares enough to educate themselves about this stuff. That's really what it comes down to: love, attention, and willingness to do what's best for them, even when it's not easy. Thanks so much for tuning in today. I hope this was helpful, and I'd love to hear about your experiences with pasture management for at-risk horses. Until next time, take care of yourselves and your horses. Bye-bye.